The word yoga, we all know, only means the yoke or unite. And you can approach it by various schools. Eventually, you end up having to go inside. And there are male yogis. The science is called yoga. And the male is called a yogi. And the female is called a yogini. So if one tells you they're practicing their yogi, you can know they don't understand what they're saying. Well, now, it does not necessarily mean because one does posture, that is what the science really is. That's a part of it. The science embodies so many facets of life because it's called yoking or union. Now, Swami, the word is swa and me. Swa is self, the God self, and me is master, one who masters that self. But he has to be initiated into it. And in initiation, there is a technique that is given. Also, there are all initiated into the Shankara, who was the first Swami that reorganized the Swami order. And this is divided into eight parts. I'm in the part known as Saraswati. Saraswati is referred to wisdom, the wisdom of life. Now, Yogananda was initiated into the Giri, that is the mountain, the one who climbs and lay new frontiers, set new goals. Sagar is one who goes out and spreads the word among people in primitive countries, go among people who are involved with everyday serving themselves, fishing, hunting. See? And the other branches have different functions. So you will often find the word, the last word behind the name of the Swami. Now his name is indicating how he is recycling the energy in his body. Since I'm initiated into Saraswati, that means through a certain wisdom, I master myself, Swami, and I express Nityananda. Ananda means bliss, Nitya means ever new, through the nitty gritty of things. I like to get down to the nitty gritty of it. So one boy says, when we make our little booklets to God, we're going to have a page and call you Swami Nitty Gritty Answers. But Nitya really means ever new, getting down to the fine points of things. Paramahamsa Yogananda, Ananda meaning bliss, yoga means union with the bliss. See? The requirements of the initiate life, and I'm not talking primarily for the renunciate, there are many places for that. I'm talking more for the householder, one who does not go away from his obligations or his environment, one who carries on the family life. This has more appeal to me. Even before I met Master Yogananda via one of those manifested principles, I did not see him physically and went to California. I was living in Canada. And one night I had a manifestation. And even when I found out he was a living man, I wrote and asked to be interested in the science of meditation. And even he wrote back and told me, stay where you are, meditate, don't come and see my body. Now, this is quite heartrending for someone who is searching for truth to be told from that level, don't come and see the body. You know, this can really shake you up. Well, I didn't go. Yet, I was also told, the best will come to you. Years pass. I did not see his body until I found out he had passed on. And I wanted to go to India to be a Swami, really get down to the science of meditation. And even then, every attempt blocked it. Eventually, Anand Swami Maharaj from India came, 1969. Initiated me into Swamihood. Well, I realized Master Yogananda had always foreseen my life in his simple way, indicated what I should have done. So I just responded. But I preferred, when I met Anand Swami Maharaj, to find out from his life that he was a householder. You can imagine my joy. Paramahansa Yogananda was a renunciate. I started to put two things together and see, well, why I should not have gone to see his body or be in his presence. I might have been carried away, swayed away with the renunciation and repeat the same thing all over again in like past lives. Here. But maybe this was my particular role now to pursue the path in the home with the wife and the daily responsibilities. But you know, your mind tells you something else, and when you're confronted with the ideal, you think that's the wrong thing to do. But after meeting Anand Swami Maharaj and finding out here was a man that was married, family, all the ups and downs, fought alongside with Mahatma Gandhi to free his country, became a millionaire in the world, pursued a spiritual life, I said, this is what I was looking for, a rounded out life at last. Here in society, I can pursue an occupation, still follow my spiritual life inwardly, still be responsible to a wife, still take on the commitments of society, the general growth of the community. I saw this was what we need. So I said, this initiate life has more ideal to me. Then I find that everyone I turn around and come in contact have the same problems. They want to be spiritual. They want to love one another as husband and wife. Yet conflict comes up that seem to drive them away from each other. So I realized if I was to live the initiate life for the householder, then this is the reason why Master Yogananda did not want me to see his body. The requirements are very simple for the householder. In fact, they are so simple that most householders don't even recognize it. We don't have to leave the home. The home is already an ashram or a retreat. Treat it as such. Treat your home as a spiritual place. A little corner dedicated to daily meditation would be exactly the same in a big retreat with a chapel. The basic disciplines are the minimization of the intake of the animal life. Not drastic. Cleaning up this body as much as you can. Trying to regain the physical well-being of it. Respect for each other as husband and wife. And to spend a little time in daily meditation, morning and evening, by yourself or together. Any confrontation or doubt as to one's progress, have an open negotiation with the other person and let them help you to cycle out any frustration inside. We did a mass recycling today in our meditation as a group, trying to release, try to make decisions. Any internal pressure, if two people work at it, they can clear it up. In their ashrams, the student goes to his teacher to help him overcome the problem. In the home, the husband and wife can help each other. Then the children can be helped. Now, the initiate life for the householder has one advantage over the renunciate initiate. That is, the masters do not keep the strong disciple close to him. He keeps the weak ones, and he calls them lambs. They are the renunciates. The householder initiate is one who is away from him. He calls them sheep, because they are strong, they can stand on their own 2 feet. They have already made inroads in their consciousness to solve problems, and are now becoming like the master consciousness. In the ashrams or in the retreats in the Eastern country, the most evolved student of that master is never close to him. You will always find him in the kitchen preparing food. It's a fact. His presence, his contact with the food, imparts the master's grace to all those who need nourishment in many ways. If a master is going to bless food for a group of people, and let's say the food is broken up in plates for each one, and for a specific person, his love will go in different ways. Now, the person who is the most advanced will always be the one to give it out. So one would get the impression, when they go to a retreat, that the person who is handling the food is the most unevolved individual, and the one who's sitting down next to the master with all the books, making all the different records and everything, is the most advanced one. But inwardly inside, it's not so. The master can trust the one there handling the food without any fear. The one he keeps close, he's got to constantly correct him, lest he may slip back. The householder is the one that is recorded to have more given to him because of his ability to stand on his own 2 feet. Therefore, there is a saying, greater the obstacle, greater the man. Since he takes on the householder life, he takes on greater responsibilities. If he takes on the renunciate life, he is cutting off certain responsibilities. The householder has to balance his life, and he does not avoid confrontation. Whereas the renunciate may say, well, I don't like society, I can go and hide myself. But when a man is married to his wife, he can't up and say, I can take off and go in the woods. She's not going to like it. See, because of the confrontations. So the initiate life that I'm following is the householder life. And this is the part that is for modern men here in the West, in any part of the world. Modern man can take heart in his household obligations now and gain realization. Meditation by yourself or together is vitally important in your home life. Your own home is your own retreat. And you know, between myself and my wife, who tries to compete to cook the food? So we all want to get that grace to serve. So the husband can learn now how to prepare the food or the joy of doing it, because his handling of it gives off the vibrations of his consciousness. Equally, the wife who handles it gives off the vibrations. And respect for the body temple. This is one of the most important things of the householder life. The householder does not try to abuse it, because he knows that this is not like the renunciate who has cut off everything and would not get involved. Therefore, the householder becomes more aware of keeping the body healthier, better conditioned. So he's more responsive in many ways, not only to his wife and family, but to the environment and society in which he lives in. The structure of society is based on the marriage. It's not based on the eunuch. This is why the householder life has more to offer mankind. The fabric of mankind is involved in a father, mother, God. To just say God is father, never think of mother, it's not possible. I cannot look at myself and say I didn't have a mother. I just had a father. True. Can't say I have a father and no mother. These two parts make for the whole. The householder life is not difficult. We don't run from anything. We face everything. Initiation into it is very simple. It involves how the energy is locked into the body and can be practiced in the home, just as much as you can practice in a retreat as a renunciate. But they tell me this, and I've seen it with brother disciples and friends of mine who I visited in the retreats, that the renunciate man is working harder, longer hours than the happy married man. Because from the time he gets into the retreat, the one in charge makes sure that this new recruit will keep his nose to the grindstone, and he's have no time to let up, let alone no comforts of someone being sorry for his wounds. So he has to keep his nose to the grindstone. So when I meet some of these renunciates, they said, you know, you're lucky. Here we come, we thought we'd have more time to meditate. We could sit down and really get into this thing. But from the time we are here, we are working from 6 o'clock to 10 o'clock at night. And lights out at 10:30. So, you see, I didn't get anything by looking at the renunciate life. Because they have a routine. In the morning they have to get up at 6, 5:30 to 6. Gets a few minutes of meditation, then off into the routine of getting the place going, fixing the room. And midday, a few minutes to sit down and eat and then go again. So actually, the renunciate is not so happy as he thinks he is, but he needs that lesson. Whereas the married man who takes on the responsibility, the obligations, he has more to contend, but there's a greater joy that comes inside because he's sharing not only with himself, with others that he's involved with right away. The renunciate does not have to take out a lease and a house. He doesn't have to take out insurance in his car. He doesn't have to worry about if his children cry out for food or medicine. The householder has that. Now let's see the consciousness at work. The man who renounces does not have a confrontation to draw on the divine source to solve it right away. Whereas the man who has a confrontation, he's forced to go in and call on that divine force to satisfy the need, because he's going to turn heaven and hell to get something to feed that crying baby. You see, he doesn't care now if he suffers all the pangs of his own aches and pains. He doesn't want to see his child in that state. He, of all persons, is actually drawing this consciousness down to work and putting it into action. Sometimes we don't realize how close the householder is lined up with the God Self. And because he does not wear the robe and have the outward prestige, one may think he's not spiritual. And the one who has renounced and taken the robe and has the outward prestige, we think he is spiritual. The real battle begins when the householder tackles the problems of living, because God is life. And that is why you can take heart wherever you are, that the initiate life of the householder is still the greatest. Now, to cite some interesting cases. There was a saint by the name of Vyas Muni. Muni means monk. And he had a son named Sakuntala. The boy was in the mother's womb, and the father taught him the entire Bhagavad Gita. That when he was born, at the age of 4, he repeated the Bhagavad Gita back to his father. Now, this sounds quite unusual. But the boy grew up and wanted his father to initiate him into the monkhood, into the spiritual life. And the father says, no. I want you to go to King Janaka. He will initiate you to this. So the boy wanted to be a renunciate, follow the path. He decided to go and see King Janaka. Arriving at the court of King Janaka, he saw this king, the flagon of wine, lump of roast hair, beautiful women running around, and he's enjoying himself. And this is his court. So the boy says to himself, that's the type of teacher to give me, lead me to God? No, sir, my father has done me an injustice. He goes back to see his father. The father says, no, I can't introduce you to the spiritual life. Go back to King Janaka. He is your true guide. So, heartbroken, he went back. And in going back, he was hiding behind the bushes looking at the king, not realizing the king was realized inside. And the king clapped his hand, told one of the couriers to call the young men. Then he dismissed the people. Then he, as the boy approached, the king said to him, "I see you are the son of the great sage Vyas Muni." Now no introduction is necessary. The boy realized here for the first time he's confronting someone with consciousness, living ordinary household life. So they spent a while and had some wonderful experiences. Now another household monk was Lahiri Mayashu. He lived in his home, earned his livelihood, and one day he was sitting down by the door, looking out, and along came a Swami, a renunciate. In India, this is unheard of, that the renunciate monk would walk up and abase himself in front of a householder. It's usually the reverse. The householder throws himself at the feet of the renunciate. So all the disciples of the renunciate Swami were aghast. And they said, "How could you, a renunciate, break such tradition, do such a thing to a householder? He's just an ordinary man in a house." And the Swami turned around and said, "Brother, the realization of my brother is such, I will willingly renounce this law and plot for it." In other words, that consciousness was more involved in the truth than the outward garb, where he was wearing the outward garb and they don't have the inner truth of the thing. Sri Yukteswar was also a married man. Gautama Buddha was also a married man. Guru Nanak, the founder of the Sikh religion, was also a married man. The present Sikh master, Master Charan Singh, is a married man. He's the head of the Sikh religion. He's a lawyer by profession and a doctor of arts, engineer. And he has the full realization inside. Yet he carries on his business and he's a millionaire. He owns a plantation inherited from his grandfather. He's alive and he feeds an average of 160,000 people four times a year out of his pocket. So we see the householder sage is an unusual sage or person. Anand Maharaj, the one that initiated me, as I said, he too made headway by remaining as a householder and attaining the inner realization. When we think that the householder life is impractical for spiritual life, we are wrong. In this age, which we call the Aquarian Age, or which the Hindus call the Dwapara Age, it is the age of the saint millionaire. Many saints with full realization will be millionaires in their own right, self-made men, married. All the masses in the East perceive potential saints waiting to be awakened in this part of the world, already married with their families. They are potentially awaiting to be awakened inside. So the initiate life is a very simple life. It doesn't call for much renouncing. A little moment every day in your little corner as you spend meditating. and a half hours per day is required for the initiate as a householder to meditate. 1/10 portion of 24 hours. The only real form of tithing. Render unto God what is God's. Render unto Caesar what is Caesar. The householder does both. He pays taxes and he meditates and render his consciousness back to God. The renunciate, he doesn't render to Caesar. He's over involved trying to render to God. But does he really render? He may spend 10-12 hours never really rendering anything. Yet the householder can, because of his tremendous acumen, involvement, decision making, he can harness this consciousness quicker and really render his consciousness to that light. And as soon as he sees that light, he can feel it and he's engrossed in it. So I'm not trying to oversell the householder life, but I realize here in this part of the world, it is one of the most neglected part of the spiritual life, the home life. We all seem to think that the renunciation is the ideal life. It was good in Kali Yuga or in the Piscean Age when we did not understand the properties of matter, let alone atomic physics clearly. It was not so well utilized or publicized. But here, as we become more and more aware of the structure of our environment, the householder life is the only life that offers great promise. Because one can have his education, one can retain his family life, one can aspire to the best ideal in an intellectual way, occupational way, and still gain complete God realization. What more rounded out opportunity can a man have, or a woman? Thank you for listening to my... If you have questions, we're glad to answer it.
How many initiates joined with you, and how many finished or were washed out?
Well, when you say join with me, in what sense of the word are you?
How many did the Swami have, and how many went on to become a Swami?
You mean Ananda Swami or Paramahamsa Yogananda? Or?
Well, in the householder field, really.
Oh, in the householder field. The percentage of the householders realize men are like that in relation to the percentage of the renunciate men. There are more householder renunciates who are realized than the renunciate himself. On record, there are more, especially in women. Don't think there are not women realized masters. You know, I once saw a cartoon and my wife cut it out just to make sure that people, when they come there, here is a mountain climber in the Himalayas, and he reaches the highest peak, and who should he see at the top of the peak? A woman in lotus posture, and she's saying to him, "How enlightened you are. Didn't you know there are women masters too?" Which is true, they are women masters, and they don't have necessarily to renounce. Some have renounced, like Mirabin, Nandamoy, but others are married. In the case of Anandamoy Ma, she's still alive. She's the head of the Banaras retreat of her own. And she's married. And what is an interesting thing about it is this. The night she was married to her husband, when he came in the room, embraced his wife and found himself 15 feet across the other side of the room. Then he woke up to the reality, here is a female master. And he remained for the balance of his life to become her spiritual servant, yet her husband to provide. He grew into realization also inside. Now the two have learned the lesson of soul mating, because she not only acted as a master to him, she lifted him up in his soul, that they grew together inside. See what can happen? And she was married, and she still is married. She hasn't. He's passed on. She's alive. So there are women masters too. Well, Master Kirpal Singh, who is another brother disciple of Master Charan Singh of the Sikh, he's a Sikh. He's married. The last great master, Jaimal Singh, was a married man. These men have all attained realization and were married.
Have two masters married?
A male master and a female master? Yes. The present Master Charan Singh, his wife is a fully realized master in her own right. I'll tell you a little story about her. The grandfather was the head of the ashram not too long ago when Dr. Julian Johnson from this country went to visit the grandfather and studied with him and wrote the book called The Path of the Masters. He stayed at that retreat, and one day the grandson came in to pay respects to the grandfather. After prostrating to the grandfather said, you know, you have to get married. He says, no, I don't want to get married. He says, yes, you have. Well, he let it be. One day, a train is coming along, and the train don't normally stop at a spot where this retreat is. And a man and his young daughter were in train. He was a student of the boy's grandfather. The girl said to her father, Daddy, I'd like to go see the master. Just like that. He says, child, the train don't stop here. She said, I want to see the master. He couldn't pacify her. Just as the train got to the point where the village is, the wheels are turning and the train is not going. It stops right there. It's not turning, but the train is not going. The train is right there. They wire ahead. They say something is wrong with the train. They want an engineer to come and fix it. That'll take 2 days. She got out on the father with her, and they went to see the great teacher. He paid respect to his teacher. But as soon as he came in the compound, the teacher was sitting down, meditating with his group of students. And he opened his eyes and he looked at her, the young girl, and he said, why do you bother me? Why you want me to stop trains for you? Just like that. Anyway, she said to the master, would you initiate me into the spiritual life? So the students around says, Master, she's too young. Well, he touched her on her head, and she had a marvelous experience. Just then the grandson walked in. So he said to the grandson, you have to get married, you know. I don't want to get married, grandfather. I'm too busy studying to be a lawyer. I'm going to be an engineer and a lawyer. I'm going to do things in this world. I got no time, you know. It's going to be a real trailblazer. So the grandfather says, you've got to get married. He says, well, I don't know of any woman that's going to match up with me. He says, all right. Here is your future wife. That was the young girl. So he looked at the girl, couldn't accept her as his wife, that proposed to be. grandparents and parents always select, you know. This is part of the custom. So the grandfather says, you meditate and see how far you can go in your consciousness. And he closed his eyes to meditate. Grandfather winked at the girl. Go find him. As far as he went inside the inner consciousness, she followed him. There was not a place he could hide in God that she couldn't find him. Then he realized he was confronted, checkmate. He got married, and he is the head of the retreat, and his wife works with him together. So I am very happy to say I've got the same problem. But it's a marvelous thing to have. Any other questions?
How does one measure a fully realized master? Is there a special way of knowing when someone has reached that state?
The four basic things are: he does not accept no gifts. He earns his livelihood. He does not attract you to God by miracles. And he only tells you the knowledge of God through the life current and the sound current. And that means you will hear this current inside of yourself. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word is made flesh and dwelt in man. This is the essence of his message. He always tells you that. Another thing, he allows you to examine his life from all facets before you decide that he's a master. He will never tell you he is a master. He will always say, I am a servant or I'm a disciple of a great master. There is no room in his mind to tell you he is a master. He's a servant, and he loves to cook. True.
Can you tell us how you found your wife?
Very interesting. She was praying years ago while I was living in Canada for someone to live in a spiritual way. I was traveling back and forth, and the day she left Colorado to return to Texas was the very day I arrived in Texas with a friend, and the very day I lost everything stolen out of the car, so I was stranded. A few days after, I had to go to the West Coast. Years passed, I came back to Texas not knowing why. I was invited by a group of people to talk on meditation. They had heard that I was used to study and teach meditation. And when I attended the meditation group, one of the boys who ran the group said to me, I'd like you to meet a friend of ours. She's a doctor. I said, all right. The next day, she came. We met. Then she told me years after, I had a vision of a retreat being built in Tyler since in 1948. And she's been studying all that time to accumulate information about running one. So, in a way, our lives have interlocked. But I don't say it's an easy life. Greater the obstacle, greater the man. I'm here. It's not so easy for her to be there. She's there. It's not easy for me to be here. See? And if you don't call on the phone, you're neglecting me. And if you call on the phone, you're costing me too much money. But you love it. You know, at times I go out in the jobs that I have to work, and you don't call immediately, something is wrong. Loss of affection. But you know, inner consciousness works in a strange way. The body wants one type of communication, and the soul wants another type of communication. So, who wins? I think the body wins. In the end, the soul wins, you know. Both parties know that inner trust is there.
Yes.
How and when does one become an initiate?
When you feel you are ready to accept the whole soul of life as in way of walking in God. And I am here up to Wednesday, and if God is willing for you to walk that path, you may knock at the door and appear, and then you will get the information. You see, it's not for me to beg you or try to trap you or put you into a position to be one. It must come from an inner experience that the household of life is the life you want. You see, I cannot say to you, a married couple, that the renunciate life or the household of life is the ideal. I am presenting what I am. If you think it is the one you want to stay in, good. If you think the other one is better, then all these things will resolve themselves for you. I pray that within 3 days, any resolution that is made, I'll be happy to serve. If not, I'm still happy to listen. Don't jump into anything until you resolve it in yourself. Have an inner experience first. See, many of us are thrown together and we think we're not in the right place. But we are in the right place. We have to learn how to recognize it. Yes.
Now, he supposedly performs miracles and brings out all kinds of objects to bear.
Mm-hmm.
If this is not what a master does, if he's using the spiritual force in a negative form, he would come in.
He's not attracting disciples to him, you know. He's not attracting people to him to take them to God. He's just showing that he's a God-realized man. His Godness is flowing through him. Of what man will be in the golden age? He's a forerunner. What John the Baptist was to Jesus, Sai Baba so happened to turn out to be what we will be when we are realized. I do have something from him, which he has materialized for me. So I know what type of consciousness is there. He is an example. The word Sai Baba, Satya Sai Baba. You see, one does not call him Sai. It's Satya. There is an age in the Hindu cycles that are called Satya Yuga. That's the golden age for the Greeks. The age of the perfect God-man walking, performing his normal functions, which we think are miracles. Now, Baba means father. See? Or example. He is an example of what man eventually will be on this planet Earth when we arrive at that stage. In every age, the Creator allows one of his creation to be an example of the God Self. There has never been an age where there's never been one. Let's back up 100 years. If you were living in India or China or someplace, you might have run into one such person too. Now you're living today in this age, and the information is coming out that such a person does exist. We'll always have in every age one such person, even the great master Babaji, who retains his physical body. Give and take a few hundred years, he's a little close to 1,000. Still, he retains it to show what man God body can be. I've been blessed with his grace, put it that way. They do exist, and we are not to infringe upon their freedom. We are only to realize that they are lives of great men who have made their lives sublime. They have gone ahead of us, leaving footprints on the sands of time. And that we should also make our lives like into that. See, the poet was saying that, in a sense, lives of great men all remind us we should make our lives sublime, going ahead of us, leaving footprints on the sands of time. These great men who have realized themselves will always be examples for us. If there are no examples, we have no hope. If Master Jesus did not come down to live among us, would we have anything to hope for? If we don't think he will come back, is there anything to hope for too? You see, hope is important. Thank you.